my women, my Simply Women, my sisters, my sisters, and all of those of you that are listening maybe today for the very first time. Thanks for joining me. This is Crystal. It's Tuesday, December 6th. That means we are getting really close to the holidays. And I started Christmas shopping yesterday for the first time. And when I got to the store, my credit card was declined twice. And I was like, what is going on? And then I realized that I hadn't grabbed the new card with the new expiry date. But let me tell you, that can be one of those. Hey, have you ever had that happen when you got a cart full of all your Christmas presents that you finally decide to go and do and then your card declines? Let's just say it keeps life very interesting. Always fun and all worked out. Anyways, ladies, I'm so excited to be able to coach you today, to chat with you. This may be your very first time that you've called in to chat with Crystal, and I am so excited that you're here with me today. If you're on your phone line, that is the best way to get coaching with me. And all you have to do on your phone is look at the keypad and press star 2. And you will not unmute your line. Everybody's muted right now. But what that will do is put you right in the queue, and you and I can chat. We can do some coaching. We can figure out if there's an area in your life that you're feeling stuck, uncertain, confused, angry, frustrated, afraid, whatever it might be, whatever you're going through. You do not need to feel ashamed, embarrassed, like you can't ask for help. I've learned firsthand the importance of asking for help and being okay to ask for help and being okay to say, I for whatever reason, even if I usually have it together and usually I know the answers and usually I know what I'm doing, for whatever reason, right now in this moment, I can't seem to find my way through it. And that's the best thing you can do when you're sometimes just, you know, they call it you're sort of in the forest and you can't, you know, find your way out. You know, you're so far in the forest that you can't even see the trees. And sometimes it really is true that someone outside of it can look in, look down, almost like you're in a little helicopter flying over top of the forest, and they can go, oh, there you are. And you know what? You're just 10 feet away from a path if you walk to your right. I remember years ago, someone saying to my mom, and my mom told me this story, and I was probably a teenager at the time, and I thought, what a really neat analogy. I love analogies, little metaphors, little parables, but analogies are really great for me because I like to take complex ideas and simplify them for myself and for other people. So whether we're talking something complex about the brain, or we're talking something complex about emotions, or we're talking about asking for help, which can feel very, very hard and complicated because it takes so much courage to be vulnerable. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to be vulnerable. Anyways, I remember when I was young, like I said, I think I was a teenager, my mom was going through a tough time, and she'd gone finally to ask for help financially. And she went to a lawyer's office, and she sat down in the chair. I'm feeling like I got some feedback in my own ear. I think it's my own headset. And she, you know, sort of sat down in front of the lawyer and said, I don't get it. I'm doing all of these things amazing. I've got this on the go and that on the go and this on the go, and I'm struggling. I just feel like I'm struggling, and I really need a helping hand. And I remember the way she came home, and she was so happy because this person had offered to help her. And the way he described it, he said, you know what I see when I look at you right now? I feel like I'm at the top of the well, and I'm looking down, and you think you're just lost down there in the dark, and it's so hard, and you're struggling. And I literally am looking down, and I know you keep jumping, and you can't find that bucket, and you don't even know how you're ever going to get out of the well. You've been crying, you've been calling, you've been screaming, but the bucket that will reel you up is 1 inch above your fingertips. If you could just realize that you're not so far away that you think you can't be found, or you think you're so in the dark that you can't find the light. He said, if you would just reach up one little inch, I could reel you up. And I remember her coming home and going, isn't that a great analogy? And I remember thinking, isn't that what it is to ask for help? Is to know that even if you think you're so far in the dark that you don't even think there's a bucket, there's always a bucket just above you. And it usually feels like it's just a tiny bit out of reach. But if you will really ask for that help, jump a little more. Just decide that you matter enough, because that's what it comes down to. You have to decide, I matter enough at this point that my needs are more important than my pride. I very rarely, like ever, like I've probably watched that show Sister Wives a handful of times. And I think I watched it maybe two or three times, like years ago. Like I'm thinking a good, I don't know how long it's been on the air, but like maybe it's been on the air for 7, 8 years. I don't even know. I'm totally guessing. But it feels like I watched it a long time ago. And then for whatever reason, whatever night of the week it comes on, I think it was Sunday, I was here, I was doing some work on my laptop, and I had the TV on, and this Sister Wives comes on. And for the first time, I guess, if you guys haven't seen the show, this is the show about the couple where there's one husband and he has four wives. And they live in the States, and for all, you know, until they went on this TV show, for all intensive purposes, nobody knew that he had actually four wives. He had to kind of sign that he only had one wife, and everybody else kept their own names, and all the reasons around it. Now, I don't want to get into a discussion of whether or not we think it's okay to have four wives, or why they like that, or why that's, but that's their beliefs, and that's if it's working for them. But I always used to think to myself, how does that work? Like, they seem so lovely. Like, I remember when I'd see them, like, years ago, I'd think, wow, they're love. Oh, now he's bringing Robin, the new one, in. I remember I watched up until he had three wives, and he was bringing a new wife in, and just how lovely they all were together. They're just lovely together. So I just happened, I stopped watching it. You know, it's just not, just finding this all like, wow, it's crazy. This guy's got, like, 27 million children. He's got, oh, my God, now he's, it was just like, anyways. So I'm rambling. Then I see it on Sunday night and it comes on. And I'm watching the two original wives have this conversation where they realize that I guess something has happened and you can't keep up the facade, especially with a TV camera on you, right, for 7 or 8 years. So I guess something's happened and the first wife was unhappy and then she was looking elsewhere on the internet and she got catfished from another woman who was pretending to be a man who was really probably setting her up to, you know, publicly screw her. And anyways, it all came out on the show, I guess. So I'm like, wow, look at the drama that's unfolded since I haven't been here. And then they go a little further, and they're talking about how really these two wives, the second wife says how the truth of what this relationship is between these wives, and she says, I can't even sit on the same couch beside her. Like, we lived for years in, I had my home, almost like, imagine a semi-detached house where there's two houses joined together. And she says, you know, I would walk out my house, walk down the driveway and get in my car, and she just happened to walk out of her house at the same time. We wouldn't even say hi to each other. We were sharing the same husband. We didn't even say hi to each other. And when we had to do these family things, and now they have this TV show, they were talking about going in the car, but she's like, we've never been in a car together. I can't even imagine sitting in a car with this woman. Anyway, so the therapist, they're in a therapy session. So the therapist says, would you come over and just sit on the couch beside you? Like, oh, this is really hard. Who would be the first one to do it? And you just see these two women who have literally been apparently sister wives for like 20 years, and they can't look at each other. They're both waiting, and I'm thinking, wow, look how hard it is for people to have relationships. Look how hard it is for these two women to, one of them just to be vulnerable and say, yeah, I want to know you. I want to be friends with you. I want to actually be sister wives with you. If that's like, I'm not judging the whole concept, but it just showed me, like, wow, it's really hard for people to communicate. It's really, really hard for women to ask for help. And it's really hard for women sometimes to really let down their walls with other women. And it's really hard for us to be vulnerable in front of each other. And it's really hard sometimes for another woman to ask for help from another woman. What would that mean about me? What would that say about me? Does that mean I'm not as empowered? Does that mean I'm... So I just want to tell you today, for those of you that are listening maybe for the first time, or you're back again, and you've always wondered if maybe it's your day to put up your hand, to just press *2 into your phone and to get some support or some coaching, some encouragement, some help, some love, some sisterly love, because we aren't sister wives, but we are sisters here. And I want you to know that you can be as vulnerable as you need to be, that there is just like literally nothing you could say to me that would shock me and would make me push you away or be or to judge you. So the best way that we can have breakthroughs in our lives is having the courage to honor ourselves, to decide that whatever challenge we're going through, it matters enough to talk about it. And somehow when we talk about it, when you claim it, when you name it and you claim it, it gives you this safe place to grieve it and release it. And so today, if you would love to release something that you're struggling with, to be able to really just wipe the slate clean, find freedom, find liberation, I would love to be able to support you. So star 2 on your keypad. I'm going to go to the Q&A just on our website, see if anybody has put in a question. I do have a question here. Yeah, it's a man. We have a man listening from Ghana. Ghana. He says, what can I do to have an angel that will give me money? I guess become an angel that will give her money, and you'll find her. But there you go. That's why we don't have a lot of men. Eric, what would you have to do to find an angel that will give you money? Jeez, ladies, can we all just laugh at that one? And I'm now going to decline that question, and we're going to go back to our phone lines, and now you see why I do what I do, ladies. Sending you all love. I'm going to our phone lines. I think this is Tanya calling from the West Coast, East Coast. Tanya, is this you?
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm sorry.
Hey, Tanya. No problem. How are things, Tanya? You're not so good.
Things are a little rough lately.
Yeah, let's fill me in. Tell me what's been going on and tell me where I can support you in getting some coaching.
I've just been awfully emotional since my dad passed, and I just find the holidays is bringing everything back up again. And
yeah,
I don't want to live in the past anymore. I want to move forward, and I'm just tired of crying.
Yeah, well, let's stay with that for a minute. Let's just stay with that for a minute. How long do you feel like you've been crying? Has it been since your dad passed, or do you feel like it's been a lifetime of crying?
Well, it feels like a lifetime.
And there's a lot of truth.
To be honest, there's
the lack of truth is it feels like a lifetime.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me what you're sad about. Tell me just if it didn't make you a bad woman, a bad anything, it didn't make you neurotic, it didn't make you crazy, it didn't make you overly emotional, it didn't make you anything. Tell me what's coming up for you right now that you feel so sad about.
I just kind of feel like I've lost myself a little bit.
Okay.
When
do you feel like you started losing yourself?
Well, it was during when my dad was dying.
And tell me about how long ago that was.
Dad died in August.
Oh, darling, this is really new. So, yeah, this will be your first Christmas without him?
Yep.
Yeah. So, Tanya, I would say the healthiest thing that you can let yourself do right now is cry.
I've been doing that.
Yeah, but that's healthy because, you know, I back in the day used to hear people talk about, I shouldn't say back in the day, I just am not around that much anymore, but there was a time when, you know, the law of attraction became really big and everybody would talk about, you just got to pivot out of a feeling. That was the word that was used all the time. You got to pivot out of it. So if you feel sad and you don't want to feel sad, think about what you want to feel and you pivot out of that feeling. And I would think to myself, well, that just seems so unhealthy. Like if your dad has passed and it's the first holiday, the first Christmas of your entire life that you're not spending with your dad, that's really natural, normal, healthy feelings that are coming up for you. And when you're crying, tell me like how much you're crying, tell me how what your life is looking like, and really, like if you were to really look at it, are you crying all the time, all day long, every day? Tell me what's really happening.
Well, I cry daily.
Yeah?
And,
How long? How long do you cry every day? You say, I cry daily. For how many hours?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe a couple hours a day.
Okay.
But there's more to it than dad just dying.
Okay, so tell me what else is coming up.
Well, when he was dying on his deathbed, I mean, I've always been a daddy's girl. I've taken care of him pretty well my whole life.
Yeah.
And he had brought news that he wasn't my dad. And he wasn't a dad to, like, four of us. And
where did he get this news from?
He had it. He just decided at that point in time to let us know.
And do you think that's first, can I first ask you this? Do you think that's true?
I don't know. I found out that one brother is definitely not his biologically.
Okay.
And I know another one isn't.
Okay, so your dad knew from how long? When the kids were young?
I would say so, yes.
Yeah, okay. So dad on his deathbed says to his children, how does he say it? Does he say it in a mean way? Does he say it in just a sort of he's coming in and out of consciousness? Does he say it in a I need you to know and it's okay? Does he say it in I need you to know you're never my children and I don't love you? Tell me how he said it.
No, he's
always...
I mean,
the context of it, because context is really, really important.
He's always loved us, but he told us that he didn't think that we were his.
Okay.
And it wasn't in a mean or hurtful way. But I have one brother that is definitely his, or he thinks he is anyway.
Okay.
And he's a favorite child, and that's part of it too.
But you just found this out. So for years, is it making sense of thinking, oh, I see why he gave that brother a little bit more attention, because he knew for sure that one was his?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it doesn't. Is it helping you to give you a little bit of, it was never about me, it was about my mom?
Yes and no. Like,
is
I say,
your mom still alive?
No, my mom passed a while ago.
Yeah.
They died
so,
on the same day, 10 years apart.
Yeah, and he forgave her.
Yes and no on that as well, because he had a lot of anger over the years.
Well, he did have anger. Did he stay with her? Did they stay married forever?
No, they did not.
Did they divorce?
Yes, and he remarried.
Okay. And did they divorce when you were young?
I was 11.
Okay. So, wow. So 11 years old, your parents go through a divorce, and now, you know, let's imagine for a minute, Tanya, and I want you to still stay in your, you can stay in your grieving place, absolutely. But I want you just for a moment to, because you're sad about a lot of different things, and we're going to try to just move through them in a way that feels natural and healing, as it just feels right. But so as you look back, what was it like being a little girl in your home? Where were the siblings? See, it sounds like you have a lot of brothers. Were they older? Were they younger? Where were you in terms of all the kids?
I have 4 older brothers and 1 younger brother.
Are you the only girl?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so 4 older brothers. And how much older?
I have one that's 5 years older than me, then it's like 6, 7, I think 8.
Okay, so
there was
a break between you and all of them was the 5th.
Yes.
You were the 5th, and there was a 5-year break.
Yes, and my little brother, there's a 7-year break.
Okay, and is that the one he thinks is his?
No. No,
okay.
It's one of the older brothers.
The first one. The second?
The second one.
Okay. So the second child, so your mom got pregnant when she was young.
Yes.
Right? How old would she have been when she got pregnant with her first child?
Actually, I have a half-sister, too, and I think mom was 15 when she had Mary.
So that's your eldest. You had an eldest sister.
Yes.
And where did she live? Where did Mary live?
I never seen her. I didn't meet her till I was 16 years old.
And that's because Mary was sent away.
She was taken away from my mom.
Yeah.
And adopted.
Was she taken away, or was your mom made to give her up?
Well, mom was made to give her up.
Yeah.
By her mother.
Yeah, it was a crazy time back. Like, it's crazy. Like, people talk about things now, or people talk about, you know, I don't even want to get into the whole argument when people talk about Planned Parenthood and all of that and how da-da-da-da-da, because what was going on back then to your mom, to one of my aunts, was when they got pregnant, if they got pregnant, there's no birth control, nobody talking about anything. So your mom's 14 years old, 14 or 15 years old, she gets pregnant, and then she probably got sent away because that's what they did back then, so the family wouldn't be shamed. So
yeah.
the girl gets sent away, she gets sent to live somewhere, have her baby, give her baby up for adoption, come home and never talk about it to anybody. Nobody's ever supposed to know.
Exactly.
And that's why you didn't know. So your mom is already, we don't even know what she was. She sexually abused when she was growing up? Do you know any of that?
She was raped.
Your poor mother was so sexually screwed up, so emotionally screwed up, so mentally screwed up that what so often happens is when you've been raped, you actually seek out, you're always trying to repair the innocence of your sexuality. And it seems so bizarre to do it like this, But it's like we will seek the very thing that wounded us to try to repair it. So I'm raped, so I need the attention of boys. And every time I have sex with a new boy, somehow I'm trying to recreate this feeling of love or something that doesn't feel so horrible and violating. So you just keep sort of being, you're promiscuous, all in the hopes of somehow healing yourself, not realizing you can never get it from that way. So your poor mother, raped, who knows if she was sexually abused, we don't even know. We didn't. People didn't talk about that stuff. She'd been raped, now she's pregnant. She's, by the time she's 15, she's got the wounds of a 45-year-old woman.
Absolutely.
So now she gets pregnant with another guy, and then she gets pregnant with your dad's son. What, how old would she have been by the time she's pregnant with her third baby, your second brother?
Oh, goodness. I'm going to say early 20s.
Yeah, so she's like 21, let's just say 21, and she's had three kids by this point, three from three different men. What do you think she felt about herself as a woman in that culture of that time? How would you feel about yourself in this culture at this time that you have three different babies by three different men by the time you're 21?
I don't know. I would have no self-esteem, and I'd feel like a slut.
Yeah, and there's a laugh of truth. That's the laugh of truth, that your mom was made to feel like a slut. And your mom was judged.
I didn't know a lot of it until my dad died.
Yes.
I never had a relationship with mom, and I hated her for years because she threw me away. And
But she threw you away because you were the only girl. You were the girl. And your mom couldn't parent a girl. Your mom couldn't parent a girl. I just need you to know that. My mom couldn't parent me either. My mom threw me away too. My mom was raped. My mom was pregnant as a teenager. And this is this healing now that happens within you, Tanya, is this healing of the part of you that hates your mom, the part of you that has so much compassion and feels so sorry for her because there's a part of you that's so wise that is an observer of this. There is a part of you that sees your mom as a broken, wounded 21-year-old girl that had three children from three different men. And then, God bless your dad, he came in for the, and he was like, no, that baby's mine, and I'm just going to claim all of them. And I've married a woman who's really wounded and keeps having relationships with other men because she's desperately trying to feel whole again and doesn't know ever how to ever reclaim her innocence and curiosity in life and self-esteem. So your mom effed up so badly as a mother, but she was so effed up as a woman. And your dad did his best to stand by and take care of all of you.
He did.
Yeah, God bless him.
But right now it's...
And somehow on his deathbed, he had to tell you the truth so that you could now have that information, because the truth, even if it hurts in the moment, will always set you free. This will set you free. This will allow you to begin to really heal the way you feel towards your mom.
Oh, it has that way.
Like, I just look at that and think, imagine, she ended up having, she actually had, so you have four older brothers, one younger, five, six, seven children. Seven pregnancies your mother went through.
Mm-hmm.
And did not know how to be a mother. She was in so much daughter energy. Your mother was in so much daughter energy. She had so buried that part of her that was selfless. That was not safe. In her world, to be selfless was not safe. So she created this protection that she thought would keep her the safest, which was, I will take care of me. I will do what I have to do for me. And I will not give too much to these children because I can't. I don't have the love, self-love. I don't have the ability to love myself. I have no idea how to show these children love, and I don't deserve them. I can guarantee you your mother didn't feel she deserved you children. or your dad. And they got divorced by the time you were 11. And your mom had to carry that guilt and shame and self-disgust and self-loathing. And just, she was just like, she was definitely the bad parent. And your dad got to be the good guy.
Yes.
No, you would think I was a psychic.
But in the end, what happened with my dad, too, is he put a will out and he put this one child that was his in it. And I get it. But
what did he do now? Okay, so then he dies and the will is that he left more to the one child that's his?
All to one child. And what it did is it tore our family apart now.
Yeah, well, it's only been since August. So it's temporarily pulling, tearing your family apart. Money always does that.
It does, I know.
Always. This is not your family. This is every family where there's money involved.
And I don't care about the money. I love my family.
Okay, so let's talk about what you're feeling now. Tell me about the relationship you had with your five brothers up until this August. Tell the truth.
Well, we were always fairly close. I mean, the one that was his was moved away for a long time, so we didn't see him as often.
Well, let's talk about that. That's big. So five of you stayed close and one wasn't.
Yes.
And the one that was the real son wasn't.
He was away most of Dad's life.
And was he away from his father, too?
Yes.
So
he would come for visits, but he wasn't around all the time for a lot of, you know, growing up even.
And why was that? Where did he go?
He just moved away. He got married and had his family, and he was just making a life elsewhere, which is fine.
Okay, and so you have the five of you, and in comparison to his life, the five of you that stayed close, five of you stayed close, how would you describe your relationship in terms of healthiness? Or dysfunction?
Oh, it was dysfunctional.
Okay.
Just because
I knew it.
The life I grew up with. It was a volatile household to live
yep.
in.
Yeah, I get it. So the one that moved away from outside, nobody knows really what's going on when looking in. From the outside, when you look at his life, did it seem as volatile and dysfunctional as the five that stayed close?
No.
No. Because he knew. He got some kind of love from his dad that the rest of you didn't get, and you're all competing. So there's all this rivalry between the five of you that stayed close, and the one that just knew he always got that. He got that gift from his dad that allowed him to go, you're all fucking crazy. I'm getting out of here. I'm staying away.
Pretty well.
And was there another little laugh of truth in there?
Yeah.
And the yeah. one that moved away, that said, you guys are all fucking crazy, moved away, got all the money.
Yes.
Yeah, because he was the one who, in your dad's eyes, would have, he whether he really was his perfect, wonderful son, in your dad's eyes, he's the one who actually did something with his life.
Yes, I guess.
Yeah, do you see that? And do you see that rivalry, that he moved away a long time ago, and so in your dad's eyes, he was like, he's my real son, he's got his shit together, he's moved over there. And then tell me about the five of you that stayed close, what it's been like over the years.
Over the years? I mean, we're still somewhat close. I mean, as close as our family can get, I guess. We're not a typical family.
Okay.
You know, we
all families are crazy, just so you know.
Oh,
we're all crazy.
Oh, God, I see it.
So we're somewhat... Okay, and then tell me what happened once your dad died. How much money are we even talking about that your dad left?
Oh, it's not even anything significant. It was just enough to upset the apple cart and get everybody fighting. And
okay, so who's fighting? Let's really look at who's fighting. Get really clear on who's fighting.
Well, it's mainly my little brother that just found out that he was not biologically my dad.
Okay, so the little brother, yeah, there's one. Who else?
The other ones are kind of neutral like I am.
So I want you to see something. You've got to learn how to recontextualize the way you're seeing things. Because It isn't. You said something sort of like, as just as blown up. I forget. I should have wrote the words down, but it's sort of like, it's just, no, you've got one little brother who's, did you say 7 years younger than you?
Yes.
Okay, so you got one little brother that's 7 years younger. How close was he to your dad?
He wasn't very close.
So he wasn't close. He's your little brother. He loves to create shit. There's all this dysfunction. He knows he's not from your dad. So he then this one that's way, way older, literally like 7, 12, like literally like 15 years older than him, gets this little bit of a lump sum of money from dad.
Mm.
And so what is this little brother who's 15 years younger from than the older one really doing?
I'm not really sure.
So why is it causing you so much anxiety?
It caused me anxiety because I've always taken care of my dad. Like when he was
stop.
Ill.
Okay, stop. You got to stop because here's the truth. You're really hurt that your dad didn't leave you anything.
No, it's not the monetary.
It's not the money. It's that you were snubbed in his will. And you took care of him out of all of those 5, 6 kids.
I just feel betrayed by my dad, like at the end.
There it is. That's what I'm getting at, Tanya.
Yeah.
That's what we have to get to the root of it. And the root is, I feel betrayed. Yes. That's what you feel. You feel betrayed. Tell me what else you feel. If it didn't make you a bad daughter, it didn't make you a bad sister, it didn't make you a bad woman, it doesn't make you a bad wife, it doesn't make you a bad anything. You got to tell the truth about what you really feel. Are you angry?
I don't know if I'm angry anymore. I'm just...
Were you angry?
Oh, I was very angry for a while.
Yeah. Tell me what you felt. Tell me what it felt like when you first... Did you go to a lawyer's office and have the will read? How did you find out? How did you even find out that you were not in the will at all?
The little brother again.
Okay.
He's very intelligent and he's very articulate, and he had wrote a letter to the older brother. He was worried that we were going to, maybe the older brother was taking advantage
mm-hmm.
of us and dad.
Mm-hmm.
Because my dad wasn't, he wasn't really a sound mind for the past 5 or 6 years. So
mm-hmm.
all of this transpired after dad was already sick.
Okay. So your little brother, who's not even close to your dad, not even that
yes.
close to your dad, is thinking the older brother who's stable, doesn't have a lot of dysfunction, has a good, clean, just healthy life. There isn't even that much money left over, but he's thinking that older brother is somehow taking advantage of your dad.
Yes.
Was there any truth to it?
And there was a truck that was involved, and he didn't get the truck, and the little brother didn't get the truck, and that's what a lot of it was about.
Okay,
was,
but you got to figure out what part is yours, because I want you just to know, I have complete and utter sympathy, and I can't even imagine what you're going through. My dad hasn't died yet, and I'm not even close to my dad, and I know there's going to be a whole ton of stuff that comes up because he's still my dad, and I feel the same way, betrayed, neglected, forgotten about, so stuff's going to come up. And I get it. My grandparents died. My grandparents had a lot of money. They have like 8, 6 grandchildren, and everything went to my brother. Nothing came to anybody because this is what happens in death where you're like, why would grandparents do that? Or why would a father do that? Or why? Why? Why, Dad? Why? Why when you had how much money, Tanya? $20,000, $50,000, $100,000? How much money are you talking about?
It might have been, like with the house and all, it might have been like $150,000.
Okay, so $150,000. Dad, why? Why wouldn't you just split it between 5 of us, 6 of us? Everybody would have got 30 or 40. It would have put a little dent for all of us. Everybody, why? Is that what you were thinking?
That's pretty well what I was feeling.
Yeah, there's honesty. So the honesty is, I don't know why my dad would do that. Why do you think? You can't really figure it out, but tell me why you think. If you could, like, just rise above your anger, just rise above that feeling that you were rejected, just try to rise above it. Just try to rise up higher right now, like you're rising into your highest self, like the smartest thought processing, the most neutral, detached, just trying to really look through your father's lenses. Why do you think he did that? Do you think it was to hurt you?
No.
So why do you think he did that?
He did it because he's old-fashioned and he thought that he was his only son.
Yeah, so he just did what he thought was right.
I think so.
Yeah?
I don't think he was ever intending to be mean or malicious in any way.
He just thought, I got all these kids, but I don't have to give my money to all these kids. I got to give it to the one that's my bloodline because he's old-fashioned, and that's how he thought.
If anything, though, I'm more angry about the lies that came, you know, prior to the will even. It wasn't only about the money. It was, you know.
What were the other lies? What were the lies?
If you knew that we weren't your children, why didn't you tell us until you're on your deathbed?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah, you're angry at a lot of things right now that your dad has done right now. Why leave this right till you're dying? We can't even have. Maybe he didn't want to ever have to live through his life with that stress. Maybe he didn't know how to communicate. Maybe he was like those sister wives. Did you hear me talking about them at the beginning of the show?
I did.
Sitting on the couch, and they can't even look at each other. They ask a question, and it's like, who's going to answer first? And they both sit and sort of stare at their hands. These are women who have been sister wives for 20 years, or whatever it has been, 25 years, 30 years, whatever it is on that show. So, Tanya, your dad didn't have the communication skills, the courage to be vulnerable, the courage to have conversations that could get heated, that could get passionate, that could get sad, that could get intense. And for the last 5 or 6 years of his life, he wasn't totally had wits about him anyways, but he didn't have the emotional strength or probably the physical strength to even have this conversation with any of his kids. But deep down, he knew he had to have it before he died.
That makes sense.
He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. But he knew that he couldn't let that secret go to his grave. And people tell the truth at their death, usually. Very, very few people will lie on their deathbed. That's why we should listen to people when they're on their deathbed telling stories or making, you know, confessions. Because they usually need to clear out everything on their soul that's weighing on their shadow. They want to clean their shadow up before they pass.
And that makes sense, too. It really does.
He needed to do that, Tanya. He needed to do that for him. Maybe he needed to do that for his own anger at your mom. Maybe he had to do that for his own feeling of, like, I can't believe I got betrayed and raised all these kids, and it's been hard. All these kids that weren't mine. I worked my whole goddamn life off trying to make enough money to put food on the table to feed 6 kids, and one of them was mine.
And he's not sure of that, and neither are we. I haven't had the DNA done yet.
It doesn't matter.
I'd like to know my roots.
Then do it.
Yeah.
Then
that's the thing. I mean, I'm not going to love him any less or,
yeah.
You know.
If you could tell your dad how you feel, and you didn't have to worry about his feelings, and you didn't have to worry about if it hurt his feelings that you were really pissed on it, that all this came out, what would you want him to know?
I already told him on his deathbed.
But you found out afterwards that he didn't leave you any money.
Oh, no, we knew because he kept telling us all the way through, you know, the house goes to this one, and he told us every day. And
so he was adamant on his deathbed, and what did you tell him about that?
Well, I just told him that I didn't want to hear of the other brother every day of life and that I thought it was really unfair of him to hold this information out till the very end, and that
yep.
It was hurtful.
Yeah. And what did he say?
He didn't say anything, but the next day he forgot, so it didn't matter, right? He had dementia a little bit.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, and you know what? Maybe he wasn't of his right sound mind when he created that idea of not giving it to all the kids.
I really believe that. I do, and like I say, it's not about the money.
Because I'll tell you one thing. If he had his wits about him, he would have remembered the next day. And it's very likely he could have had a lawyer come in when he seemed like he had his wits about him and done something like that, and the lawyer would have been like, is this guy of sound mind? And they would have said he is. It's very possible that this is not the loving father that he was his whole life, the mistakes that he made, granted, and all of that. This may have been done really, truly near the end of his life. And it doesn't reflect what he would have done 10 years ago.
No, for sure.
I know, it's hard to forgive him. It's hard to forgive him that he would be that insensitive at his on his deathbed.
I just want to let it go.
Yeah. What do you think you need to do to let this to wipe the slate clean with him? To just say to just forgive him. What do you think you need to really let it go? Because pain like this, Tanya, gets anchored in the body, and we think we let it go until all of a sudden, you know, something comes up and we realize, like, there's still a lot. Like, all this crying is really healthy for you. I want you to know that. It's probably the most healthy thing you can be doing right now is just crying this out, because there will reach a point in sorrow. I want you to imagine, you're one of my SWAT students, are you not?
Yes.
Tanya? Okay, I want you to imagine right now your self-empowerment, you're feeling empowered, feeling happy again, getting back to that place where the crying will stop. I want you to do this with me, because this is the way you'll coach someone else one day. I want you to imagine there's a ladder, and, you know, at the very top of that ladder is completely beyond forgiveness for your dad. It's almost like, oh, it was all part of the divine plan. Like, there's just a level of enlightenment. Let's imagine the top of the ladder is enlightenment. Like, the light has turned on. You completely... You actually reach this point where you realize, oh my God, he doesn't even need to apologize, and I don't even, forgiveness wasn't even necessary. Like, imagine that you reach that point. But at the very bottom is shame. Very worst thing a person can feel is ashamed. So your dad on his deathbed brought a real deep level of shame to you. And so that's why you felt so heavy. Like, just shocking. That's just shocking to have to learn something like that right before your dad's about to die, and then to not leave any money to you, his only daughter. That just really probably, that was just like hurtful to the deepest core, to a part of you, to the little girl in you, to the daddy's girl in you. Would that be true?
Yes.
Yeah, and I can hear your prideful yes. Like, the way you just said that, that was like, yes, it takes a lot of courage to be vulnerable and say, yeah, that did.
And he was my idol. He was everything.
Yeah. And so he really, really, that it really hurt you to feel that betrayed. And that, if you could feel that feeling of shame, where did you feel it in your body? That feeling of, like, that you realize, like, my God, I came from a mom who had 7 kids with possibly 7 different men, maybe 5 different men, maybe 4 different men, maybe more of your siblings than you are actually all from your dad. Okay, but that feeling of that kind of shame, that story, that, like, that volatile, dysfunctional, I came from crazy. And I came from crazy too, by the way. So I really had to deal with shame and get right in underneath it, because shame is soul-sucking at its deepest core. And shame sort of is this really quiet, insidious thing that, see, the reason, I want you to imagine this ladder for a minute. So we start climbing the ladder. We don't want to be ashamed. So we climb up. There's guilt, and then there's blame, and then there's sorrow, and then there's fear, and then there's jealousy, desire, insecurity, and then there's anger, and then there's pride. And then just above that is where we start to go into a place that we start shifting into a more empowered place, and we can get neutral. Then above neutrality, we move you into courage and willingness. But right now, imagine that something's happened. It happens to all of us. This is not a Tanya thing. This happens to all of us. When you're sexually abused, you instantly go from this sense of enlightenment as a little girl to boom. You can just give, someone just rips your power from you, and you just fall down the ladder. Boom, 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 boom. It's literally like you just your self-esteem falls. You just fall into this sad place, this heavy place. So this is what happens to everybody. This is why we've all felt shame. This is not a you thing or me thing. This, we've all had these things where we realize, oh my God, my mom did that, or my dad did that, or I came from that, or I'm so mortified, or that happened to me, or somebody said that. These are these feelings. So I want you to imagine, though, that the problem for most of us, like those women, those sister wives, is that the majority of people, sadly, they never get up beyond neutrality to move up towards enlightenment. They never get to neutrality and then courage and willingness and acceptance and love and joy and peace and enlightenment. They never get way up there. They never get up there, because here's the problem. Pride and shame are opposites that attract. So shame keeps you stuck in the muck, feeling like, and then pride stops you from ever getting help. It stops you from ever telling the truth. It stops you from ever really owning your story. It stops you from really ever wanting to tell everybody because it would reflect on you. So for a lot of us, it's like we feel ashamed, and then there is guilt for, you know, I shouldn't care about the money, but I do, and I feel guilty that I you know, there's all these shoulds. I shouldn't feel this way, and I should, you know, I shouldn't be mad at him, but I am, and I'm crying every day, and I shouldn't be crying, and I can't seem to get over this, and, you know, all of that stuff. And then we start to move up into blame. So the blame, you know, that I've heard you saying is sort of like, you know, my little brother caused this, and then my other brothers and my father. And so that actually means when you can get up into blame, it means you're moving beyond your shame. You're starting to move up higher. And then the sorrow. So it's, you're moving up into sorrow where you're crying. You're crying every day. You're feeling the sorrow and the sadness of the reality of all of this. And it is sad. It is sad. It's sad that your mom was raped, got pregnant at 15, got pregnant again, 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 possibly by all different men. It's sad. It's sad that your parents split up when you were 11. You, as the only little girl in this whole family, had to go through all of that with all these men around you, and your mom took off, and you were basically the mother to all of these men and your dad your whole life, because you said that. I've taken care of my dad my whole life.
Yeah, my little brother went with my mom.
Yeah, so
I
became the wife to my dad, and imagine you could move up into your fear for a minute. What are you afraid right now? If you could just be honest, like, this is what I'm afraid of right now, and that this is what's happening, and this is what I'm afraid of. This is what I'm afraid will happen. This is what I'm afraid. If you could just speak it fast and not be worried about being vulnerable, what are you really afraid of right now?
I wasn't good enough, like, as a daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. Afraid that you're not enough. Tell me what else you're afraid.
I've always felt that I wasn't enough.
Yeah. Yeah, that deep, big fear. And guess what happened? He friggin' confirmed it. That's what he did. He freaking confirmed at the 11th hour that you, your whole life, in mother energy, taking care of all these men, you were never enough. No one ever treated you like you were enough, and you never felt like you were enough. And in the end, he didn't even give you that friggin' 40 grand, even if it was just your one fair share of the lot. He snubbed you. Tell me what else comes up for you in terms of fear. Could you have used that money?
Oh, I mean, anybody could, but it was never about the money. It's just
okay.
The family all fighting, and it's just...
So who's all fighting?
I feel alone.
I feel alone, and I'm afraid I'm going to be alone. Do you feel more alone now than before?
Absolutely.
Tell me all the reasons why you feel so alone.
I don't see my brothers that often anymore. And,
yeah.
I mean, both parents are gone.
Yeah. Who do you have? Tell me about your relationship with your son.
It's not great.
Yeah.
He had a psychotic break about 5 years ago, and it's never got back to the way it should be.
Yeah. So tell me, if you could just sort of say it all, and you didn't have to worry, and you didn't have to worry about being vulnerable, and you didn't make it anything, what are you afraid is happening now as you look at your future? What are you afraid of as you look towards the future? Just fill this in. I'm afraid that...
Right now, I'm just afraid I'm not ever going to be anything. I'm losing faith in myself, and I have love around me. I have my kids love me, my husband loves me, and I guess I just have to put it in a place where I can let that other part go and forgive my dad and my mom.
Are you afraid that you're not going to be able to forgive them, really, and that this is just going to be an albatross around your neck all the time?
Oh no, I can forgive.
Okay, so tell me what else you're afraid. What are you afraid of? Like, let's really shine light on. Okay, I'm afraid that I'm not ever going to be anything because your dad and your mom made this huge mistake of somehow making you feel like you were never enough.
I'm afraid I'm going to be rejected by everybody.
Who's everybody? Tell me.
Just anybody out there, like even friends, family. It's
afraid of being rejected.
That's been my life, a fear of rejection.
Yeah. And your dad did it. He rejected you. Have you ever heard that Carl Jung saying, what you fear, you draw near?
Yes.
Okay, so let's not draw near any more bullshit to show you where you have fear. Right? So I have this great fear that I'm not enough. I have this fear that I'm to be rejected. I'm afraid that I'm unimportant. What else? Unimportant, not good enough. What else? Not worthy? What are the words?
Not worthy was one of them, but...
Yeah.
I really can't think of anything right now.
Okay, this is great. I know we would want to shift you right now up into desire and move you up into moving, just plowing, channeling all the anger that you have into, like, productive, constructive action steps that are going to make you feel worthy and are going to make you feel like you realize you are enough and you're going to get your faith back in yourself. We're going to get there. But here's the thing, Tanya. What I really want you to do is I want you to really understand right now that this fear, so you know when I said sort of that shame and pride there are together, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want you to now look at fear and courage because they are the next two bookends. Okay, so shame and pride keeps us stuck, and we can't really move people in this. When you're going to do coaching, you can't really move someone from like this bookend of shame and pride, their two bookends, to shifting them higher and higher and higher, but just around this one area. I'm not talking about who you are as a person, but around this area. And it took a lot of courage for you to call today and for you to share. So there is fear and courage as two new bookends. So let's imagine we can move you up. And one of the ways that we can kind of shift you into your courage is realize that in between that fear and that courage, there's these emotions of anger and pride. You start to realize what I want. What do you want? Like, let's give it to me like quick. If I wasn't afraid, I would. If I wasn't afraid, I would.
Stand up and. For myself.
Yeah, stand up for myself.
And face this, which I've been trying to.
Well, what would you do differently, a little bit more? What would you do a little bit more right now if you weren't afraid? If you were guaranteed, if you could wave a magic wand and you were guaranteed success was going to happen for you, what would you wish for? What would you want right now? If you could be like, I'm taking control of this family, I'm getting this shit together and I'm going to turn things around and this is the way it's going to work, what would you do? Who would you call? Who would be the first person courage would have you call?
My older brother.
Yeah, the one that got all the money?
Yes.
And what would you
say
to him?
I have tried to talk to him, too.
Okay,
okay.
But right now, the way that you've tried to talk to him, as angry as you were, as upset as you were, as rejected as you were, as afraid as you were, the energy would have not come out as a really empowered woman.
I don't know.
Did it? Did he respond?
Sure.
Did he listen? Did you get your needs met?
He did listen to me.
Okay, great. What did he say? Well, you called him right away, and what happened?
I told him, you know, I was sorry that this was put on him because it put a lot of stress on him.
Okay, great. I'm sorry this was put on you, but now you could divvy up the money, or what would you say to him?
No, it wasn't even about the money.
Okay, so what would courage have you do now, Tanya? If you couldn't fail, you could wave a magic wand and you could get your needs met. Not even courage. Forget about courage. Don't even forget about what you had to do. If you could just somehow God took care of it all, the sprinkle fairy dust down on the earth and it all worked out, what would it look like for you? What would the ideal
family,
be for you?
The family would be close again and the problems in the past are gone.
Well, they're not going to be gone, but what if they got resolved or healed?
Absolutely. And we do healing.
Are you beginning? Do you see that maybe it will take 6 more months, and then over the course of 18 months to 2 years, there could be a really beautiful healing that could happen within the family?
I hope it is.
What if that could be your wish list, though? Would your wish list be, I know you can't turn the Titanic around just like that, because we've just hit an iceberg. That happened. Dad died. He left the money to one. The youngest one's just out of his mind. My feelings are really hurt. Everybody's just feeling just sort of raw, and we're just not communicating. But there's a deep love there. And that love, like that movie Jurassic Park, love is like life. There's a line in Jurassic Park that says you can try to bury it, squash it, I forget the whole thing, douse it, whatever it was, but what is will always find a way. And life always finds a way, and love always finds a way. And there's sometimes that we have these temporary pit stops, and it creates all this contrast and this sorrow and the sadness and how much you need them and you love them and you want them. And moving forward, it's really important for you to just do what you can to bring your family back together, because it matters to you. This is important to you. Love isn't, you know, love is perfect. People aren't. And that if you stay true to that love, that eventually you will be the light this whole family needs.
I wish I could set them all down, though, and just say, look,
you will
at
in
what,
time. You will. I'm going to guarantee you will in time. You're going to get yourself back up that ladder, back into that place where you're resonating in that bright light. Listen, shit happens. Like, I don't want anyone to ever think your dad dies, you find out he's not, all of this happens from August, September, October, November, and, you know, 3.5 months, you think you're supposed to have it all figured out and you're going to be empowered, enlightened, and emotionally not being affected like a human being would? You're not Jesus.
No.
Right? But you can have that sort of like, I'm going to get to the point that I can forgive this. I can't yet, because if I faked it, I would not be honoring my own emotions.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're really being healthy right now. And it takes time. You're walking up the ladder. So let's imagine now that you just accessed your anger. What part of all this do you hate? What part do you hate? If you could just be like, it doesn't make me a bad daughter, a bad sister, a bad nothing right now. You know what I hate? I hate, tell me, just some quick things. I hate.
The lack of communication.
Yes. That's been there your whole freaking life.
Healthy communication, I should say. Lack of healthy communication.
Yes. Okay, I hate that. I hate this lack of healthy communication. What else do you hate? Quick. Just don't even overthink it. Just speak it right from your, I hate this, and I hate this, and I hate this. Tell me everything you hate. Tell me what you hate about what this has all done to your family. Tell me what you hate about your family. Tell me what you hate about your mom or your dad or the communication, or tell me what you hate. Tell me what you hate about your family.
I hate all the lies.
The lies. Yes, I hate those lies. They've hurt so many people. Tell me what else you hate.
I hate the way that they didn't love us growing up.
Yes.
Either, but I understand it now.
Okay, but you're getting enlightened too quick. Tell me what you hate. You hate the way you didn't get your needs met. They didn't love you the way you deserve to be loved.
No.
I hate that for you. I hate that for you. I hate it, Tanya. I hate it. Tell me what else you hate.
I hate the fact that I found out the possible father of mine was a man that tried to molest me when I was a young girl after my
fucking
mother.
Holy fuck, Tanya, do you know how fucking huge this is? That this just came out finally 40 minutes later? The man who was your father tried to molest you?
Not my father that raised me.
The man that was your biological father tried to molest you? How old were you?
12.
I hate him. I hate him, and I'm so glad you had your real dad. I mean, your dad. I hate that you've been through this much craziness. I hate that your family was so dysfunctional. I hate that your parents were so wounded. I hate that your mother's so broken. I hate that your broken mother put all of this pain and suffering on all of these people. And I hate that she did this to you. I hate it for you. I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it. I hate it. What else do you hate?
I'm not a hater.
I know, but do you hate that the man that was supposed to be your dad would do that to you?
Absolutely, but I can't.
Don't even do the but yet. You don't need to take away that part yet. I hate when people say things like, you know, I was molested, but I've learned to forgive and I've got, no, we don't even need to say that. I hate that that happened. I just hate everything about that. I hate everything about all this pain that you've been through. I hate every part of it. I hate that your dad left when you were 11 and that your mother brought your father, but possibly biological father, back into her life somehow to be around you, that he could try to molest you.
She didn't know. I didn't tell her.
Did she bring him around?
No, he came around to the house because he was always there, and I was home alone, and my dad was at work.
I hate that he did that to you. I hate that. It's disgusting. It's furiously disgusting. I want to punch him in the face for you. I hate that.
I hate that all of this made me hate me.
I hate that. I hate what all of this has done to a part of you. I need you to know that there's a part of you that loves you. There's a part of you that loves you. There's a part of you that is so whole and so golden and so beautiful and so compassionate and so joyful and loving. There's a part of you that's so accepting and loves every part of you. And there's a part of you that hates you. And that's the part of you we got to get to know and love and find her. I want you to find her. And you want to know how you're going to find her? I want you to think about the part of you, the little girl inside of you, that feels unworthy and afraid and like she's just not enough.
Unlovable.
Unlovable. I want you to find that part of you. How old would you say she is? That part of you that first made that decision, I think I might actually be unlovable.
It would have been when I was 11.
11.
Maybe even a little earlier when all the fighting started. Yeah. Maybe 9.
Yeah. Yeah. I want you to imagine right now you have a 9-year-old little girl. Right before the fighting started, you have an 8-year-old little girl that's still golden. It's so precious. Tanya, do you remember me talking about the story of the Golden Buddha?
Yes.
So for anyone that hasn't heard it before, there's this true story really quickly, and we're just getting here to the top of the hour. I know I haven't even checked here. What time are we at? We're just after, so we won't be much longer, and I don't want to leave you hanging. But for anyone who's never heard me tell this story, there is this story of this clay Buddha that sat in Thailand for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years in a deserted temple. And it's a 5-ton clay statue, and the monks decided they wanted to move it into a more visited temple. So they got all these big, this was in 1957, they put these big straps underneath this clay Buddha, and they began to move it, and one of the straps broke, and the Buddha fell to the ground and cracked, and everybody was horrified until they realized that under the clay was gold, and it was a solid golden Buddha. It's now the most valuable statue in the world. And the story goes that hundreds and hundreds of years ago, just like you, Tanya, you were this golden little girl. You were enlightened, you were peaceful, you were loving, you were joyous, you were accepting, you were so willing, you were courageous. You were just this amazing, beautiful, golden little girl before 11, before all the fighting, before the divorce, before your possibly biological father tried to molest you, before all this insanity just became just too much. And you made this really brilliant decision to bury your gold, the same way the monks hundreds and hundreds of years ago said, are this golden Buddha, you know, the Burmese army was coming into Thailand at the time, and those monks said, we got to cover this golden Buddha up with clay so they won't think it's valuable and they won't steal it, and it worked. But it sat in a temple for hundreds of years, and honest to goodness, how old are you, Tanya?
I'm 52.
You literally, for like 43 years, you have literally just been carrying around some clay and protection to keep that golden part of you safe. You know when you say, I don't think I'm ever going to be anything? Well, you got a brilliant, magnificent, gorgeous part of you that is still golden, that's been buried. You buried her. And this version of you that started saying things like, we're never, you know, we're always going to be rejected, we're not good enough, we're not. You let that part of you come up sometimes and run the show.
I do.
You do. That's your protection. You know how your mom took on the form of protection that was promiscuous to get her
yes.
needs met, to heal somehow that wound? Well, you've taken on the story that I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough. I get rejected all the time. That's actually become your form of protection.
I'm a pleaser.
Yeah, well, that's how you can walk around sort of and be like, you know I'm going to end up being rejected anyways. So you get to sort of have this persona. It's not serving you anymore because it's not who you really are. And
no.
You know the only way that you're going to actually let the real you up and out is you're going to have to neutralize. You're going to just ride just above your anger and your pride, that story that I'm not good enough. That's a story you've been telling yourself, and you probably held on to it for a long time. But the truth is, you have a lot of people that love you. I see your pictures. You have a husband who adores you. You will never be alone. And you actually have 5 brothers who love you. And you will, the day is going to come that you're going to get this family back together.
I will.
You will. I know that. You're just going through grieving. You will. There's a laugh of truth. You will. The laugh of truth is you will get things back on track with your family. And no family's ever going to be perfect. And friggin' shit, for what you guys have gone through, to still be pretty close and to all of you be like there at your dad's, and he had all these children that possibly weren't his, you guys are going to be just fine. And you and your son are going to be just fine.
Oh, I know that. I love them.
Yeah, you're going to be just fine. Here's what I want you to do to neutralize the story of this wounded self that's been trying to run the show. I want you to own her. I want you to own the part of you that says, I'm not worthy, I'm rejected, I'm not good enough, I'm never going to be anything. You got to get to know her. And I want you to, here's this really simple, because we're gonna have to take just for this week. I want you to do this. I literally want you to say over and over and over, look in the mirror and say the worst possible things that you would not want anyone to know about you, that you feel about yourself deep inside. Like, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not enough. I'm not enough. I want you to say it until it just loses its charge. Like, when you say it right now, how does it feel to say out loud, I'm never going to be anything?
I'm never going to be anything.
What? How much charge do you have, like, that just makes you sick to your stomach? Is a 10? Like, you can't even get the words out in your throat. It's a 10 and 1. It's not that bad. It's not truthful.
No, it's like a 3.
Yeah, it's not strong. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. Say that 5 times. Tell me what it feels like when you say those words.
I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
Say it again.
Not worthy.
Keep saying it.
I'm not worthy.
Say it again. Just keep saying
I'm not worthy.
Again.
I'm not worthy.
Again.
I'm not worthy.
Again.
I'm not worthy.
Say it 5 more times.
I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
Say it 5 more.
I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
5 more.
I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
What does it feel by the last one?
It doesn't feel right.
I want you to say it until you say, oh my God, there's been times in my life I didn't feel not worthy, but I'm worthy. Can you say I'm worthy? Can you say I'm worthy?
I'm worthy.
Say that 5 times.
I'm worthy. I'm worthy. I'm worthy. I'm worthy. I'm worthy.
How does that feel?
It feels better.
Yeah, it feels good. I want you to say I'm not worthy over and over, because you're going to feel, there's a moment, did you feel yourself when you just fought into cry?
Yes.
And then something changed. What was it?
I believed a little more in myself.
Right.
I believed that can't be true.
It's not true. It's not true. And that little bit of a cry is like, whoa, I've actually been saying this to myself. Oh, my God. and I got to keep saying this until it's almost like you take the sting out of it. You take the charge out of it. It's not true. We all feel not worthy at times, Tanya. I feel not worthy at times. I've felt not worthy at times. I felt, there's things I felt. I feel worthy now. But if that word is a sting for me, if that word saying that, if that idea that someone could possibly think I'm really not worthy, if that hurts a lot, just say it until it loses its power, because it's not true and it has power over you right now. And the only way to get neutral, to shift your bookend so that you can be, my gosh, you know what could happen right now? I'm already feeling shift, like you've just moved up into acceptance and neutrality is your bottom end.
Wow.
Your bookends are shifting. Do you feel yourself shifting a little lighter?
I think I am. Even though I've been crying a lot, but I think I do believe that I'm in a healing.
You don't even
moment.
Have to believe it. You just keep doing it until you feel it.
Mm.
You just keep doing it until you realize, you know, I'm rejected. I'm rejected. I've been rejected my whole life. You just keep saying that, and there'll be a moment where you go, what the hell am I saying this for? Like, you just keep saying it. You might just say it for 10 minutes until it just, you finally go, Tanya, get over it. There's a laugh of truth. You say it until there's something in your being that goes, Tanya, get over this. This is a bullshit story you've been telling yourself for so long that some part of you, it's your default mechanism when you're sad. It's your default mechanism to beat yourself up. And it's not true. You are worthy. And you are amazing. And your family's going to find its way back together. And your younger brother is a little hothead, and he likes to stir the pot. He's a little troublemaker. That's okay. We're going to love the troublemaker inside of you so he doesn't bug you so much. And you'll love the, you know, your brothers are all showing you different archetypes within you, that some you reject and some you love. And the ones that you're so just rejecting right now, that's just the ones that you just got to love a little more in yourself. Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
Yeah, that part of you, that little girl that doesn't feel worthy and rejected and afraid, and that part of you, that's like this shadow that's always under the surface, that's always there. And she will pop out the minute something goes wrong. See, I told you we'd be rejected. See, I told you I've never been good enough. And she needs
true.
A lot of love. She needs a lot of love. You have an 11-year-old little girl and you need so much love. You have a 12-year-old little girl inside of you that needs so much love. That's where this healing has to happen. And when you heal that 11-year-old little girl and that 12-year-old little girl, that age, find some pictures of you around that age. And I would love for you to write a letter to your mom from her, from that age, 11, 12 years old. Write a letter to your dad from the 11, 12-year-old version of you. Write a letter to your possibly biological dink head sperm donor that tried to abuse you, hurt you. Write a letter to those people and really speak from that voice of that 11-year-old girl. She needs a voice. And when she feels heard and she feels listened to and she realizes that you, Tanya, the woman, the 52-year-old woman, is there now to love her and protect her, she's going to simmer down and she's going to realize she's so loved by you. She's so wanted by you. Do not feel bad about that part of you that is a little sad, pathetic, rejected, unworthy, little, feel sorry for myself, little victim. There is a part of you that's been victimized big time, and you need to find her and give her so much love.
I can do that.
You can. And that's going to be the healing you need. And when that heals, when you have that healing in you and you can really accept that part of you that's a little sucky baby that's scared and sad, and she's deserving of so much freaking love. Don't reject her. There's a part of you that will cry every day until you start loving the part of you that cries every day.
Makes sense, too. I just
yeah,
don't want to cry anymore.
You know what, though? When you're crying, grab your journal and say, who's crying right now? How old are you? Let that part of you talk. She'll instantly come up. All of a sudden, you'll be like, oh, my God, it's my 11-year-old. What do you need to say? What do you need to be healed? What do you need from me, the woman? What do you need from the mother inside of you? There's a little girl that needs you to mother her and love her. And that's where great healing will happen for you. It's not about your dad. It's not about the will. It's not about your brothers. It's about you. And this is all happening, and it's all an awful way to give you an opportunity for a major healing. So take it.
I'm ready. Take it.
Tanya, thank you so much for calling in today. Thank you for a really great coaching call. I think a lot of us, you know, can relate to everything you shared. I mean, your stories are yours, but I think we all can relate to that 11-year-old little girl. Mine's a 12-year-old little girl, too. Now, I think we can all relate to you, and we all need to, you know, when we find that place that is screaming for attention, give her the love she needs. That's what needs to happen right now. You need to give yourself the love you need.
Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you, Tanya. Thanks for calling in. Thank you for having the courage to be so vulnerable. You're amazing. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for being part of the call today. You know, it's not always easy to do this work, but we are here to support you. For any of you that are listening, we have free mentorship coaching just like this call available to you. It doesn't matter where you live in the world. All you need to go to SWATinstitute.com. You'll see give backs, and under there is mentorship coaching, and it truly is this. It's just a win-win. We get to support you, we get to hone our skills as coaches, and you get to be supported and loved, and we're here for a lifetime. So thank you, everyone, for being on the call today. I think I'm back next Tuesday. Oh, I'm not. I'm not here next Tuesday. It's my birthday, and I'm doing an event in London, Mo Mondays, in London, Ontario, next Monday night. I won't be here for Tuesday morning, so I don't know. Will I be back the week after? Holy jumping, this may be getting close to the end of the year, maybe one more before the holidays and the new year. I've got some exciting things coming in the new year I can't wait to tell you about. Anyways, everyone, happy holidays. I know we're all going through a lot right now. Tanya, I send you so much love. Just honor yourself and be in it. This is going to be a very different holiday than you've ever been in. It's okay to just honor your grieving process, and you're going to come through this, and the best thing you can do is be in what you're in and just honor that, what's happening for you, and to really own it. I am that. I am sad. I am. These are my fears. Own those fears, and they won't own you anymore. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week, and I'll talk to y'all soon. Bye for now.
The moderator has left the conference.